sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play.
What's going on, Cubs fans? You're listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'm one of your hosts, Sean Sears, and joining me is my other co-host, Ryan Davis. Ryan, we've actually got kind of some news to talk about on today's show.
Yeah, we actually, for once, had to sit down and like narrow it down to a few topics rather than going like leaning into everything we possibly can. So that's good. That makes me excited. Talking about some DH, talking about some prospects maybe, talking about stuff we don't want to talk about but have to.
Sounds like a typical Locked On Cubs episode.
It's been the story of the offseason, right?
Yeah, it really is. For those that aren't aware, in this first segment, we're going to talk about Joe Ricketts, who is, of course, the father of Tom Ricketts and the ownership group of the Cubs. He had his emails leaked in a Splinter article, I believe, this Monday, and some of the emails that came out are obviously not good and relatively, just racist. So Ryan and I will dive into that and kind of take a look at this awful 2018-19 offseason for the Cubs and the ownership. Later, though, some fun things. Ryan talked about some potential Cubs that could be making their debuts in 2019. So we'll go over a few of those guys and where we see them fitting for this upcoming season. And then finally, we'll wrap the show up kind of hitting on some of the major MLB news, which includes Bryce Harper rumors, of course, the DH potentially coming to the NL, and the Giants are reportedly looking for outfielders, and a particular specimen type of animal has rumored that the Cubs and Jason Hayward are somehow involved, so we'll debunk some of this as we go. But that's it for that'll be our show here for Locked On Cubs. So first segment here, let's jump right into it. Joe Ricketts, these emails are awful, Ryan, obviously. For those that did not see some of these things, or you know, just kind of heard about it on Twitter, if you haven't actually read the emails, you might want to take a look at it. But for the most part, what you need to know is it was pretty inappropriately just responses, and then just overall just thoughts from Joe Ricketts and how he's pretty much against pick a minority. He isn't a fan of them, it seems like, and he's just kind of exactly what you would expect a white conservative man to be like with a lot of money. So I can't say I'm surprised. It's just one of those things where you're just incredibly disappointed by all this. I know, Ryan, you've probably got a little more articulate thoughts on this than I do. What was kind of your thoughts reading this this news as it came out yesterday?
I mean, it was unfortunate. Like we said when we started up, it's like that meme where it says disappointed but not surprised. That's kind of how I feel about it. Yeah. I don't need to let everyone in on my own personal thoughts, but I've never been a fan of Joe Ricketts just based on everything we've known about him for as long as we've known about him. I obviously try and separate my feelings for each member of the Ricketts family because they are all individuals. And they all, you know, I think they get painted with a broad brush, but they all do fall on various levels of political activism and ideals. But never really cared for Joe Ricketts much, and this kind of stuff is not surprising given what we knew about him and what we'd seen in the previous email dump. It's just really unfortunate, and I know there are a lot of people who want to point to the fact that, well, the team is really owned by Tom, Todd, Pete, and Laura, and they're the board, right?
Right.
But you can't ignore the fact that I think it was $400 million of the purchase of the Cubs came from the family trust, and
right,
that is
Joe.
Yeah, it's headed by Joe, and basically if Joe had said no, you're not buying this team, they would not have been able to do it. So they had to get his permission. They had to dig into the family trust. He is, whether you like it or not, intertwined with the Cubs. The example that I tried to kind of workshop actually on Twitter with Sarah Spain to try and come up with the right like way to say it was, it's like kind of like Virginia McCaskey. It's a less public facing Virginia McCaskey. She's part of the family that owns the team, but you know, George Halas, George McCaskey, sorry, runs the day-to-day operations. Before him, it was Michael McCaskey. She has no real, you know, hand in what's going on with the Bears on like a day-to-day operation. No. But she's a little more public-facing because she does show up to the games and she does, you know, like before the season have like, you know, her speech that she gives the players and things like that. But as far as like the actual operations, she's very hands off, and you know, she has her own life. She's very old. Joe Ricketts is less involved in that, but it's kind of a similar thing. His kids are the ones running it, but his money is tied up in the Cubs. Mm-hmm. You know, if they sold the Cubs tomorrow, he would get a giant chunk of that. So you can't say that he's not part of this. And you know, a lot of the stuff that he said, you know, about Islam, about Muslims, is racist, xenophobic. He said other things that were really terrible. He's essentially your crazy racist grandpa or uncle who's forwarding you emails, and you're just like, ah, grandpa, stop it. Like that, you know, like even Pete at one point was just like, Dad, go to Snopes.com. Like a lot of this stuff just is not true. And Joe had zero interest in vetting the stuff that he was reading before he forwarded on. He just wanted validation for his crazy racist beliefs. And so it's harmful, especially because it got out. It's extremely harmful for a lot of people. I have friends who are Muslims. I have friends who are Muslims who are Cubs fans who are extremely bothered by this. And I'm extremely bothered by it. I think everyone should be. So it's unfortunate we have to talk about this. Like we said to start, we'd love for this podcast just to be trade rumors and what's going on the field and World Series championships and talking about how cool it is to win the World Series. That would be so awesome. But unfortunately, if you're upset that we're talking about this, don't blame us. Blame the people who are making this news related to the Cubs.
Right. Tom Ricketts did release a statement, obviously, responding to his dad's emails. His dad released a statement, too, but honestly, it just, I mean, it lacked any type of empathy or sympathy, to be perfectly honest. So.
Right. Did you notice the word some in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like something, I don't have it in front of me.
Sometimes I receive emails that I should have condemned. Others, yeah. I've said things that don't reflect my values. I strongly believe that bigoted ideas are wrong.
Yeah. It's like it was just what? Like I apologize for some of the things that I said.
Right.
So yeah. So that could be anything. You know, like maybe he's not apologizing for what he said about Muslims.
It was
a very carefully crafted thing so that he wouldn't have to admit that any one specific thing he said was wrong.
Right, exactly. And then his son Tom, obviously chairman of the Cubs, released a statement saying, "We are aware of the racial insensitive emails in my father's account that were published by an online outlet. Let me be clear. The language and views expressed in these emails have no place in our society. My father is not involved with the operation of the Chicago Cubs in any way. I'm trusted with representing this organization and our fans with respect for people from all backgrounds. These emails do not reflect the culture we've worked so hard to build at the Chicago Cubs since 2009. Obviously I think we can all point out a little bit of inconsistencies there just from the last part of that comment. Sounds like his dad, maybe not involved, obviously has a huge financial gain, invested in the Cubs. And then on top of that, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily, they've built a culture that, you know, respects all peoples and backgrounds, but you know, maybe that's what they're attempting to do. I don't know, a lot there to interpret, but essentially Tom Ricketts doesn't want any part of the Cubs be associated with Joe. That's probably, it was a done deal when he gave him the money to do this. So, I mean, just another like checkered spot here in this Cubs awful offseason right now. To have to talk about this at this point, it's just frustrating.
Yeah, I feel for the people who are trying to make the point that he's not, like the articles that say Cubs owner Joe Ricketts isn't mm-hmm. really all that accurate. I mean, it may be accurate, but it is misleading at worst. Right. I like when people refer to him. The best thing I found is, Cubs owner's patriarch or Cubs patriarch, Joe Ricketts, because he is the head of the family that owns the team. So referring to him as Cubs patriarch, Joe Ricketts, I think is probably the right way to do it. It explains it in the way that is definitely accurate. It's not the two like extremes that people are falling on. Either he has absolutely no involvement with the Cubs whatsoever. That's false. He has his hands in the thing, whether he's dealing with it regularly or not. And then the other people who are saying, well, he's the owner. Well, not exactly. So it's just a confusing thing, but I think that's really like, it's probably nitpicking it too much to even have that debate. The real point here is that this is tied together with the Cubs and it's just a terrible look.
Yeah, it's not good. It's definitely not good. There's no way you can really, spin this. I think the frustrating part is, I think just about everyone assumed Joe Ricketts had thoughts like this. Just if anyone that was even remotely paying attention to the politics in the Midwest,
right?
You would know Joe Ricketts, not necessarily the glowing example of a person that people feel like has views that align with the majority
of people.
Yes, exactly. I think most common sense, you read these comments and you're like, okay, this person's a jerk. So yeah. I thought it was interesting. This will be a last point before we move on to some actual baseball talk. I thought it was interesting that Mayor Rahm Emanuel made a comment and poked kind of like at Joe Ricketts. He said something in a tweet saying how Ricketts had told him and Rahm Emanuel shared no core values, and how he at this point it could not have said a more truer thing or something. Yeah. I can appreciate someone saying that about a jerk like Joe Ricketts at this point, but I mean, like, you know, coming from Rahm Emanuel, it's like, dude, do we really have to get into the things that have gone wrong while you're in charge? Right. Like,
yeah, and to prove to everyone we're not being just politically biased here, when I saw Rahm's comment on that, and I was just like, way to go, Rahm, way to make it completely about you, but at the same time, not call for any sort of action. It was just like coming out and saying, he was just like dunking on Joe Ricketts at that point.
Exactly.
I don't know what the reason for that was. It was not worthwhile at all. I mean, he needed to make a statement, but he completely whiffed.
Let's jump into the second segment. We'll talk about some of the minor leaguers Ryan profiled that could be up with the Cubs in 2019. Stick with us here through the break on Locked On Cubs. All right, here. Welcome back to Locked On Cubs. Appreciate you guys sticking with us through the break here. As we teased before going into the break, Ryan wrote an article for Forbes kind of profiling some potential contributors to 2019 Cubs that could be making their debuts in 2019, actually. I am pulling up the article right now, Ryan, but I guess who are the players you really see kind of being able to actually do something for the Cubs this season?
So everyone I listed in this article, I don't see necessarily having an impact. I think of it as, you know, the guys who made their debut last year. Dwayne Underwood Jr. made his debut, didn't really make an impact. He pitched okay for a few innings, but I wouldn't have called him an impact player on the Cubs season. Same for a guy like James Norwood. But David Bote did have an impact on the season, and that was obvious. He had a couple really huge home runs, one of the biggest highlights of the season with the grand slam against the Nationals. So these guys will range from whether they could make an impact to whether they may just make an appearance. And some of them, I think, might even be a reach that they could make an appearance, but I think they have a chance. And for as far as impact goes, I think Dakota Mekas, who we've talked about before on this podcast, I think barring injury, maybe he injury and the caveat of him just having an unforeseen terrible season at AAA, I think he's going to make it to the big leagues. For anyone who hasn't heard previous podcasts where we've talked about him, he's a relief prospect. He's 24 years old. He has a 147 career innings in the minors with a 1.16 ERA and 190 strikeouts. Just absolutely mowing guys down.
Pretty good.
He's 6'7", 250 pounds. He only throws 92, 93, but he has a deceptive delivery. His low arm slot makes it, essentially the ball looks like it's coming 97, 98 to batters, and that's how he essentially gets them. Who knows if that'll be sustainable in the big leagues, if batters want to adjust to that eventually, but at least so far, they haven't adjusted in the minors. Obviously, they don't have the kind of scouting reports they do in the big leagues, and you know, you start seeing the same guys over and over, and they eventually get to you. So who knows? But at least for now, I think this guy could help this year. Yeah, another pitcher who I think could help this year is Adbert Alzolay.
Yeah,
he would have made his big league debut last year, I'm pretty sure, if he had not suffered a lat strain, I think, in either late May, early June. He only pitched 8 games, didn't have impressive stats, but he had a few really impressive games. He was a pitching prospect for them before that. The one game that I took down that I think, you know, he flashes potential, he pitched against the Dodgers AAA team. 7 innings, he took a no-hitter into the 7th, I'm pretty sure. Ended up with a 7-inning one-hitter, I think 6 strikeouts, no earned runs on 80 pitches. So he's fairly good. I think that he's a true starting pitching prospect, but at this point, the Cubs' list of starting pitchers ahead of him is deep enough to the point where if he makes it to the big leagues, I would bet they're using him maybe in a multi-inning role in the bullpen. So those are two guys that I think, for sure, barring injuries and barring just complete regression, I think should make it up to the big leagues this year, make their debut, and actually be able to help down the stretch. Then I have other guys like Justin Steele, who's probably going to Double A, but really the key for him is that he's been very good. He's left-handed. He throws hard. They have him on the 40-man roster now, so and that's really what you look at with a lot of these guys. Like, if they're on the 40-man roster, they have a good chance of making it to the big leagues this year, because you've already started that, you know, that kind of clock of putting them on the 40-man. It was sort of the same conversation with David Bodie last year, that we thought, you know, he was probably going to be the first up to the big leagues because he was on the 40-man. So he could make it up if he pitches well at AA. He'll go to AAA at some point, and maybe by the end of the season, he'll be a September call-up at the very least. A guy like Zach Short is the only offensive player on the list that I made, but he's a true diamond in the rough kind of big league leadoff man prospect. His .242 batting average I wrote won't wow you, but his .380 on base should. His career walk rate in the minors is 16.8%.
That'll play.
And he's a defensive shortstop who is good enough defensively to stay at short. He won the like best defensive shortstop award for AA last year, and he hit 17 home runs in a league that has some of the best pitchers. So moving to the Pacific Coast League, he should absolutely rake, I would think. He'll probably break out even a little bit more power. I mean, essentially you're talking about a slick fielding, power hitting shortstop who gets on base at a high rate. It may not all transfer to the big leagues. He may not be like a 4-win player or anything like that, but I think he'll probably be an everyday player either with the Cubs or somebody else. So that's another guy that I put down. I also wrote about Trevor Clifton, who we can get into a little bit if we want to, but he, you know, was a serious prospect a few years ago, had a terrible second half in 2017. 2018, he bounced back, made it to AAA kind of quietly. And I wrote down, like, something I'm kind of excited about for next season is Iowa's starting rotation. It should have Alzolay, Trevor Clifton, Dwayne Underwood Jr., Duncan Robinson, who we've talked about before, who probably isn't, you know, a real prospect, but has pitched well, maybe could be a long reliever or number 5 at some point as his kind of ceiling, and then also Jen Hosang. So they have some interesting pitchers who should be at AAA next year that would be worth watching. And then there's Luke Haggerty, who we could talk about.
Yeah. They just brought it back him on. I mean, of course, he was at one point a top prospect for the Cubs, I believe, right? I think he was like, I know he's 37 now. I think he was like, gosh, he was like close to the, I know he was in the Cubs top 10 prospects for a while back in like the early, it was like 2005, 2006, maybe like when he was in the prospects,
it was,
maybe earlier.
I think 2003 was probably when he was at his like peak of this guy might be a player. He was drafted number 32 overall in 2002. That was a draft where the Cubs had a lot of top draft picks in the first round. I think they had 4 in the first round, and none of them made it to the big leagues. So that tells you what it was like drafting under Jim Hendry. But with Haggerty, he's a left-hander. He throws hard. He had a really good first season. I wrote down he, as a 21-year-old in low A, 48 innings, 50 strikeouts, a 1.13 ERA. That was back when the Cubs low A team was in Boise. He required Tommy John surgery in 2003, missed the entire season, and when he returned in 2004, he had the yips. And yeah, it was like a lesser known, actually kind of worse version of Rick Ankiel. At his worst, these are just disgusting stats. So I mean, like, if you're make sure you're sitting down for this. In 2005, he pitched 6 2/3 innings with 30 walks, 4 strikeouts, and a 31.05 ERA. 30 walks in 6 2/3 innings.
What? I don't understand. Like, that seems impossible.
Right. Like, that is the yips real bad. And it wasn't just that season. It was pretty much 2004 and on. His last appearance in minor league baseball, I think, was 2006. And his last appearance in organized baseball was 2008, just 11 years ago. So wow. He's 37 now. Apparently, the yips are the thing of the past. And according to, I think it was Jeff Passan who wrote the ESPN article, he's reportedly hitting as high as 99 miles an hour and sitting at 96 with his fastball.
Wow. I didn't know he was throwing that hard. That's incredible.
Yeah. And the yips are, I mean, he's got them under control. He's seen like sports therapists who have worked with him to get over it. He talked about all kinds of, like, in my story on Forbes, I linked Jeff Passan's article, which I suggest if you're interested in this kind of thing, definitely go read.
Definitely.
This is a guy who I think at the very least you'll probably see in spring training. Get a couple innings, and then beyond that, he's going to be trying to work his way back to the big leagues with the Cubs, which I think is just an amazing story. Like, that's one of the most interesting stories for me of the entire 2019 season so far. Is I'm going to be keeping an eye on this guy. I want to see.
Right.
I want to see him at Wrigley Field. That's huge. He'd be making his major league debut at 37.
Especially for the team that drafted him almost 15 years ago.
Yeah, over that, it was 17 years ago they drafted
him. Yeah, holy cow. Yeah, because I mean, 2003, jeez. I think this is the first time I felt old.
Sorry. Yeah, welcome to it. It only gets worse.
Yeah. I know as well, before we roll into the third and final segment, I know the Cubs did go ahead and sign. It was Robert Robbins. He was one of the pitchers from the Driveline Baseball Academy. Mm-hmm. I know, like, bunch of people were tweeting stuff about him getting some type of I think he had an invite to spring training. I don't think it's anything more than that, but kind of falls in line with Luke Haggerty as well, so we'll have to keep an eye on both these guys. But yeah, Luke Haggerty, if he can pull it together, I mean, at the very least it's just a cool story and I always like seeing those. Yeah. But if he can do more than that and become a part of the Cubs, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, awesome. It'd be really cool if he could be a lefty in the bullpen, right? Like,
we need one of those.
Like you're not thinking it's going to be a long-term thing. This guy's probably never going to get rich as a baseball player at this point. You know, like, even if he has a great season this year, nobody's signing him to a, you know, 3-year, $30 million deal at 38 next year. So, I mean, this guy's just doing it for the love of it at this point, just to make it back. And I think, yeah, obviously, if it's true that he's thrown 99 at most and then 96, just sitting at 96, if he has any sort of breaking ball, you know, why not? If the yips are over, it'd be really awesome to see him in the big leagues. And before we move on, the other guy that I mentioned with the yips, Rick Ankiel, apparently he's trying to make a comeback.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Rick Ankiel, of course, is a position player at this point, right?
He was a position player. He retired. After if you're unfamiliar with the story, he came up as a rookie with the Cardinals as a left-handed pitcher, was really good, was like in like second in rookie of the year voting in I think 2000. Developed the yips, had like an awful playoffs where he was like throwing the ball to the backstop. Came back the next year, pretty much the same thing. Went down to the minors, had some injuries, could never overcome the yips. I think he developed some alcohol problems as well. And eventually he got his life turned around, came back as an outfielder and right. had a
and pretty, that's how I remember Rick Ankiel.
Pretty but. Decent career as an outfielder. And then he retired. He's been doing some Cardinals like pre and post game stuff on their show. And now he did some like sort of, baseball like tournament thing where they were playing against like college players, some like former major leaguers. And they asked him just for fun to go to the mound and throw. And he did. And he was fine, and he enjoyed it. And now he said he's going to try and make a comeback as a pitcher and throw again. I think he's like 39.
Yeah, I was going to say he's got to be close to 40.
But I'm pretty sure
he was pretty old when he came back.
Yeah, I don't know if he's with the Cardinals officially, like Haggerty is with the Cubs. I didn't see if he actually got signed or not, but I would assume that would be the team that would want to bring him back.
Yeah, I can't see anyone else really want to give him a shot, especially if he's already doing like pre and post game stuff for them. Obviously, there's a relationship there,
and he announced it on the show.
Oh, okay, yeah, then that's probably, I mean, it's either that or he's, like, going to take some trip to the Independent Baseball League. I can't see anyone being like, yeah, Rick and Keel, let's give it a shot.
But yeah, if you're totally unfamiliar, if you're on the younger side, like Sean,
yes,
made his big league debut at 19 in 1999. In 2000, he threw 175 innings with a 3.50 ERA, struck out 10 batters per nine. And then that was the postseason where he fell apart. And then the next year he threw six games, 9.4 walks per nine, five wild pitches in 24 innings, three hit batters. I mean, it was not good. His postseason pitching, there's the interesting one. In one game in 2000 against the Braves, 2 2/3 innings, six walks, I think five wild pitches. Then in 1 1/3 innings in the NLCS that year, five walks, four wild pitches. So, yeah, good for him if he's overcome it and he's going to make a comeback and try and pitch this year. But he is 39 years old. He'll turn 40 in July. So two guys I'm rooting for in a big way.
All right, let's head into the third and final segment. We'll touch on some rumors and kind of hit on the major MLB headlines as we roll into the final segment. What's up, everyone? Thanks for sticking around here for the third and final segment of Locked On Cubs. Before we roll into these segments quickly, if you guys are not yet subscribed to the podcast, please make sure you're doing that. You can subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play. I believe we're on the TuneIn app as well as Pandora now. So anywhere you can listen to a podcast, make sure you look for Locked On Cubs and subscribe. We'd appreciate that. So third and final segment here, rolling into this. There were some rumors last week about a reported Cubs and Bryce Harper meeting. I think Ryan and I can debunk that at this point. Ryan, what were kind of your thoughts on this whole incognito mode meeting with Theo Epstein and Bryce Harper?
Yeah, I mean, I know the source of the rumor fairly well. And good people, it came from Cubs Insider, which is Evan Altman, who's been a really great friend of mine. I wrote for Cubs Insider when I first got started. The rumor came from Michael Cantor, who writes for them, also a really good guy. I believe that what he was told this by someone he trusts, and I believe that that person believes what they heard. I think that what's more likely is that the Cubs didn't sit down with Scott Boras and talk about Bryce Harper and meet with them. I think if anything happened, it's most likely a phone call. And this was something that a point that I made from the start of it. When people were saying, well, the Cubs can't afford him, it's so shocking that they're meeting with him. And I said, yeah, because Theo Epstein wouldn't fly out to Vegas or Los Angeles or wherever they are to sit down and say, we can't make you an offer. They would only do that if they were making a serious offer.
Right.
If they weren't able to make a serious offer, they would make a phone call like they did on Jake Arrieta. And that's what I think has happened here is that Boras and Theo Epstein are showing each other respect, whereas Boras checked in with Epstein before Harper made a decision on any contracts, and Epstein also, you know, showed respect that he is interested, but, you know, just can't make it work. So I think that's what happened here. It's not good news for Cubs fans if that's the way it went down. It just sounds like the Cubs officially said, no, we can't put the money together to sign you, and you should make a decision based on the offers you have.
Yeah, that's essentially what I've heard too. I know you and I both hear things, and I think we've both come to, at least I have for sure, come to the maturity level realizing it doesn't matter what we put out on Twitter, things are going to happen, and we have no control or knowledge on it for the most part. Everyone's playing keep up or catch up, so whatever. I don't fault Michael or anyone at Cubs Insider. I'm sure they believe their guy. It sounds like it just got a little bit of trigger happy because it sounds like sources came out shortly right after that report came out saying, pretty much absolutely refuting that. So
yeah,
it happens, but you know, when nothing's happening,
yeah,
yeah, Exactly. So nothing more than that, though. I mean, I think we've all kind of, the ship has sailed on Bryce Harper coming to Chicago. I'm sorry, folks.
Hopefully he signs soon, and so does Manny Machado, and then we can move on to other topics and not have to.
Exactly. Also, some news that came out as well. BMLB's Players Union apparently submitted a proposal to add the DH to the National League. So I think it was sometime middle of January. Report kind of came out a couple days ago, but DH to the National League, I'm not upset about it. What are your thoughts on this, Ryan?
When I was younger, I was more of a, I like the leagues being different, and still at its core, I find it fun, and I'm a little bit traditional with that. I like watching good pitchers go up to the plate and hit home runs. That's fun for me. But I also would prefer probably a DH in the National League. You know, a lot of people are upset about it. I think you would get over it pretty quickly when you realize that your pitcher's not out there making an automatic out. How many times, and I know this happens for probably every National League team, but how many times have you watched a Cubs game last year specifically, where the Cubs finally had a rally going and then the pitcher came up with two outs, you know,
every time you Darvish pitched, I swear. Yeah.
And how many times do you have a guy who's throwing, you know, a great game in the sixth inning, but he's due up third? Like Kyle Hendricks, maybe is at 88 pitches through six innings, mowing guys down, and he's up third. So Joe Maddon pinch hits for him. Like, I'd like to be able to see Kyle Hendricks stay out there and focus on what he's doing, and do it well. And I just think it's probably better for the game. Then you have guys like, you know, we're a little older and maybe the defensive skills are dwindling, but they still are good hitters being able to take deals in the National League. For so long, the American League's had an advantage in that way. And in general, you know, guys, you know, teams like with David Ortiz with the Red Sox in the World Series, you know, the National League, you're just taking your best, like, bench guy and throwing him in the DH role while the other team has David Ortiz. And then on the opposite side of it, when you're in the National League park, you lose that DH for the National League team, and then the American League team loses it, but you've got that, like, slugger on the bench, you know? Like, it's just, it's never been, it's always been an American League advantage, and right. I think it would be really good. I think, especially for a team like the Cubs who have so much depth, I don't see, like, one specific player on the team that would be an obvious, like, everyday DH. Especially now that Schwarber has lost some weight and has actually become an okay outfielder and left.
Yeah.
But, you know, Anthony Rizzo has back problems, like, every single year. You could DH him, you know, once or twice a week and move somebody over to first base and give him a little bit of a break on defense, and that might help extend his career even. So, yeah, I think it would be good for the Cubs and good for the National League. So I hope they work it out. I don't know. Like, I've heard rumors that they're trying to get it in this year, but I don't see how they could possibly do that, considering, I mean, all the free agents are still out there. But how do you, like, make that kind of massive rule change at the last minute when everyone's, like, a lot of teams have their rosters kind of set? It seems more likely that it could be, like, the year after or the year after that, if it even happens.
Yeah, I would say probably if something were to happen, I could see it coinciding with a new CBA.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's probably more important.
But I love chaos, so I would love to see them implement the rule. Like,
oh, I would be so in for it to happen in, like, tomorrow.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Just everyone just be like, all right, well, we have a new position and no one fits it. Let's go find someone that swings the bat really hard.
Oh, well, great. Well, we sent away our Tommy La Stella, so our guy who we couldn't find plate appearances for.
All the power.
I guess now we're going to rotate the DH around, and Daniel Descalzo is going to get more plate appearances than we thought, and cool.
Good. So much for versatility. Another rumor that went out there, Giants are looking for outfielder help. This is a legitimate rumor. This came from Ken Rosenthal, who said that around 2 to 3 outfielders is what the Giants are barely looking for, which apparently if he... counting at home is an outfield. 2 to 3 people would consist of an outfield.
And looking at their outfield, yeah, they could use 2 or 3.
Yeah, apparently. So, of course, that has led to the Cat, Charles Meow, linking the Giants and Jason Hayward to another ridiculous deal of swapping bad contracts, people have hinted at Johnny Cueto. I don't think that's happening, but the Giants are looking for outfield help, and they have come out and made a little bit of an aggressive push to Bryce Harper. So another name in the kind of slew of teams interested. So kind of interesting, but also not really.
Yeah. And and this is something that I've mentioned on that Cat account, which I think
feline.
I think everyone should know that it's parody. I mean, a lot of the tweets that that account makes, it kind of indicates that it's parody, like talking about being at the winter meetings and the special things that people don't know about at the Cubs convention, like special rooms and special events that the fans aren't aware of, like those don't exist. So you should know by now. But I remember when I said on the podcast a while back that I had heard from someone I trust that Bryce Harper had told the Cubs that he would give them time if he had an offer, and they were able to put something together. He might be able to wait it out a little bit to give them a chance to make an offer. And then the Cat reported that like the next day, and claimed he didn't hear the podcast, which is fine. It's a parody account, so I don't care. But to read you something I wrote at Bet Chicago back in, I think, late November.
Yeah.
Here's the exact quote of what I wrote. There have been hints around the industry for some time that a team like the San Francisco Giants might be interested in Hayward, but it's anyone's guess if there's actual fire there or just smoke. Mark Melancon is owed $38 million over the next two seasons, which is slightly less than Hayward's payroll hit of $22.5 million each year. He's going to be 34 on opening day, and he has been a massive disappointment for the Giants, so a swap could be something to explore. The Giants covered some of Melancon's salary for 2019 and 2020, and the Cubs ate a larger portion of Hayward's deal the next 3 years. This could work.
So, that's all I have for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like the idea of Hayward to the Giants is unique to me, but this is don't think that this parody feline account came up with some unique idea that now that the Giants are looking for outfielders, that there's a rumor that Hayward, like obviously that this is something that a lot of us have been on for a while. A lot of us have actually heard things about it. And then beyond that, I think people can just make a natural, like there are a few teams that would be interested in, and the Giants would be one, especially because they have money. They're trying to compete. They have a need in the outfield. Hayward's a great outfielder, and they have a massive space in right center where they need somebody
the
who's
a
really good,
stupidly complicated outfield I've ever seen.
Yeah, they need a good outfielder who can go get it out there, and I think Hayward is a fit for them.
Yeah, and that's really all it is. It's just like on paper, it makes sense to put Jason Hayward in AT&T Park for you know however many games.
As long as he doesn't slide into the wall and injure himself again.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be bad. Don't do that. but yeah, I mean. To put this in perspective, when I worked for a sports mocker, would help put together edits for them for like just like pictures. I think I made four different Jason Hayward Giants edits while I worked there. And I worked there for only about a year and a half. So this rumor has been floating around forever. That and Sonny Gray. I feel like I probably made 10 Cubs edits of Sonny Gray. But regardless, moving on to some other quick notes here. Carlos Correa won his arbitration case of the Astros. He's going to get $5 million for 2019. I think now... I think it's 3-1 in players winning arbitration cases right now. I think there's a couple more coming. They should be decided this week, I believe. But there should be a few more coming. But yeah, three out of the four of the players have won arbitration cases, which I don't think has happened. At least not in the last 10 years when I've been really paying attention to arbitration, but I don't know if it's happened ever. So
yeah.
Shout out to Carlos Correa. But beyond that, that's about it for the week. I mean, 6 days till spring training for the Cubs, or at least pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. Yeah.
Jason Stark
about to start.
Yeah, Jason Stark put out his all unemployed team, which has become a thing for the last couple of years now, given how free agency is gone. And I'm telling you, the all unemployed team as spring training is essentially about to start is a team that could actually probably compete. I would say that they would score runs and they'd have a decent bullpen, but their starting pitching would be thin. His all unemployed team: first base Marwin Gonzalez, second base Josh Harrison, shortstop Manny Machado, third base Mike Moustakas. You have an outfield of Geraldo Parra, Adam Jones, and Bryce Harper. Evan Gattis is your DH. Martin Maldonado is your catcher. Your rotation is Dallas Keuchel, Gio Gonzalez, Irvin Santana, Jeremy Hellickson, and James Shields. And in your bullpen, your lefties are Jake Diekman and Tony Sipp. Right-handed, you have Ryan Madsen, Brad Boxberger, Bud Norris, AJ Ramos, Tyler Clippard, Sergio Romo, and your closer, Craig Kimbrell. That team could probably win a division. it might be kind of thin in the rotation, but I think they could probably bullpen their way through a lot of games and outslug people with the combination of Harper, Machado, Gattis, who can hit home runs, Marwin Gonzalez, Josh Harrison, like that. It's a decent team. I can't believe all those players are unsigned.
Right. Like that could like, and you could trade one of those players and get a pitcher if you're really making a team. You know what I mean? Like, right. Oh my gosh, like that's stupid. Man, I don't think that frustrates. I don't think that's so annoying. That's so annoying. We're 6 days away from players reporting to spring training, and the all free agency team could probably kick the crap out of half the league right now, which is so dumb.
Yep.
So on that note, we'll wrap up Lockdown Cubs. Before we do that, though, of course, we are working on some things behind the scenes. I know I've got a few things. I know I've got some work I have to finish up today for what we've been working on, but some interesting stuff coming out. I'm getting really excited. Ryan, I know you are, man.
Yeah. I mean, we still have some things to do. Should we tease it a little bit further about what we're doing?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've given a little bit too much of, or a little bit, not enough of a taste.
Yeah. I think we've given this much before, so we should go a little step further. We are going to be moving into not just audio but video.
Yeah.
And we might have some more instead of 45-minute podcasts a couple times a week, it might be more like more frequently throughout the week, maybe 10 to 15 minutes.
And of course we'll still have, I mean, the podcast as is right now will still be available in some type of format. It might just change a little bit because we might, you know, obviously pulling audio from video and things will get cut out when it's more literal and you're moving hands and doing more radio than, or we're doing more video than radio, obviously. So, but things will, we're hoping things stay the same, but better.
Yeah. We're evolving.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're evolving. And I think it's going to be in a good way. Everyone that I've talked to about the idea is very on board and thinks it's a great idea, so hopefully you, the listener, will also like it. And if you're worried that the podcast is going to be same thing, only you're staring at our faces, you know, don't worry about that. It'll be something much cooler than that, I think.
Yeah, it will be. So thanks for sticking around, Cubs fans, and I guess we'll be talking about baseball here in a couple weeks. Actual baseball, it's exciting.
Like real pitchers and catchers reporting. Next podcast next week or whenever it is after pitchers and catchers report. Be talking about guys who are in the best shape of their lives.
Of course. And we will never, ever, ever be annoyed with that. So.
No. And I'll never be in the best shape of my life again.